This is the Down East Journal on Public Radio East. I'm Jared Brumbaugh. It's been several years of planning, but 911 call centers in Jones and Lenoir counties are merging. L.C. Morris has this report on how the changes may save money, add a couple jobs, and improve emergency response for those counties.
911, what's your emergency?
Emergencies in Lenoir and Jones counties will soon be handled in a more efficient way. With the help of a $7.4 million grant provided by the North Carolina 911 Board, the two counties will be upgrading and merging. A backup center will be constructed in Jones County and renovations to the existing 911 center in Lenoir County. Currently in Jones County, 911 calls are handled by county jailers in the basement of the county jail.
The way we operate, we've been utilizing our jail staff to dispatch our emergency responders.
Jones County Manager Frankie Howard.
Since we're dual staff with the jail and the 911 center, we don't have the luxury of keeping that caller on the phone and giving that comfort level until someone gets there because they do have to take other duties as well.
Once a call has ended, the jailers continue with their daily tasks. It's not much hand-holding through a call, as the staff's priorities are stretched across the board. Upon completion, Lenoir County will house the main call center where dispatchers follow a three-point protocol. Roger Dale, Lenoir County's Emergency Services Director, explains.
One being EPD, which is Emergency Police Dispatch, and EFD, which is Emergency Fire Dispatch. And then the third protocol is EMD, which more people are familiar with. That's the Emergency Medical Dispatch.
Call communicators, also known as dispatchers, are and will be trained to help callers in stressed-out medical situations until help arrives.
If the communicator receives a call for service, and let's say that it's childbirth, they can talk the caller through a childbirth. If your loved one goes into cardiac arrest, you call communications, they can talk you through doing CPR. If you got someone choking, they can talk you through doing the Heimlich move.
Merging the two existing 911 systems is something that has been in the plans for years, initially coming in at $12 million. Now that $7.4 million has been granted with the help of a consultant, plans will be reworked to fit the budget and time frame. Howard says most of the grant will go to the communication system itself, radio infrastructure.
One thing we have done is considered using the state's radio system called Viper. It's an 800 megahertz system. We've tested that as an alternative. It has some weak points, which we're trying to see how we can make that better. But what we're doing now is we're tweaking our response back to the state 911 board as to how we're going to utilize the $7.4 million since it's less than the $12 million we asked for. So we have to revise our plan. And with that, Motorola, who's been our prime agency for radio equipment as far as a vendor, has been revising their plan. And so we're still working with them to bring that within line of the total grant that we have available.
As it stands now for Jones County, communication via radio to the lower half of the county as it nears Carteret County is touch and go. With the time frame and scale backs, Dial says the project will be phased in instead of all being done at one time. Funding for the merger was made possible through the North Carolina 911 Board. Phone users, whether it's a landline or cell phone, may have noticed a 911 service charge on their bill. Those fees are collected and distributed through the 911 board. Some of the funds are kept at the state level to issue out in grants. Other funds trickle down to the county level for operations. Howard explains how the merger of Jones and Lenoir counties came to fruition.
They had a specific grant cycle for consolidation projects. Typically, you see consolidations within one county where you've got smaller 911 centers that are operated by a town or a city. And they may want to merge with the county organization. Whereas in this case, Lenoir and Jones both had centralized 911 centers in their county, but we wanted to merge to both county centers.
Dial says it could not have come at a better time.
It's a win-win for both our counties, and the reason for that is because Lenoir County needs a backup center that we don't have. Jones County needs a new primary center that they don't have. And both counties need an upgrade to their existing radio infrastructure. And so by doing this merger, that afforded us the opportunity to receive grant funding to make this happen that otherwise would have had to come out of the taxpayer's pocket.
The combined system must be up and running by December 2014. As it stands now, Jones County dispatchers cover 473 square miles and Lenoir County dispatchers 400 square miles. I'm L.C. Morris.
Pedaling a bike from North Carolina to Florida is pretty impressive. But do it on a beach cruiser bicycle? You know, the ones with big balloon tires, large handlebars, and a basket. Well, that takes determination. This is the feat local attorney Doc Hooks is in the middle of. He left from Emerald Isle a day after Thanksgiving and is making his way to Key West. But it's not just for exercise or adventure. It's to raise funds and awareness for substance abuse prevention, a cause close to his heart.
My son died two and a half years ago. He was an addict, and that disease killed him. I'm passionate to try to help other people to prevent situations like the thing that happened with my son.
All of the funds from Hook's 1,020-mile journey will benefit the Charlie D. Hooks III Youth Leadership Award, named after his son.
I was inspired to do something to lend a hand, something that I could do that maybe would help out. And I figured doing a long-distance cycling trip on a beach cruiser bicycle, which is a sort of an unusual thing. I don't know that I've ever known anyone who's done a long-distance trip on a beach cruiser before.
Hooks is partnering with the Coastal Coalition for Substance Abuse Prevention, a nonprofit that serves Carteret, Craven, Jones, Onslow, and Pamlico counties. The money raised during the bike ride will help provide substance abuse training for youth and fund scholarships for teens involved with the SAFE program, which stands for
Substance Abuse Prevention Helps Everyone.
CSAP board chair Carol Maddox says they train students to serve as advocates in their schools and in public and political environments like county commissioner and board of education meetings.
They have worked with retail purchase outlets that sell alcohol to encourage retailers to properly ID customers who come in so that they would not be selling to underage customers.
Students that have been involved with the SAFE program for several years and are in their senior year of high school are eligible to receive the Charlie D. Hooks Youth Leadership Award. The scholarship has been offered for the last 2 years since Charlie Hooks passed away. It was his son's death that inspired Doc Hooks to pedal from North Carolina's coast to the southernmost part of Florida. The bike he's riding is a slightly modified Jamis Earth Cruiser. The large soft seat has been replaced with a road seat. Also, the bike is equipped with 4 water bottle holders. Hooks left from his home in Emerald Isle around 7 a.m. 1 week ago.
That first day, 90 miles, took me quite a long time. On a beach cruiser bike, it's hard to go faster than 10 miles an hour if you have any wind at all, unless it's at your back. But I was fortunate. I had wind at my back that day, and I made 90 miles, and I was in Wilmington, I think by 4 o'clock that afternoon. I left at 7 in the morning.
Hooks averages about 6 to 8 hours a day on the Warhorse. That's what he's calling the beach cruiser. He says the journey has been fun so far, but filled with many challenges.
You know the little things that if you run off to the right too far and it wakes you up because you hit these bumps in the road in your car? Well, those have been built into the shoulder of the road in most places, whatever they're called. And they've taken up quite a bit of what used to be a bicycle-friendly shoulder of the road. So it's a very, very narrow little path that I have along the right side of the highway.
Sometimes Hooks would be forced to ride closer to the left than he would like, putting his own safety on the line. When he wasn't dodging motorists along the busy stretch of Highway 17, there were other obstacles. Hooks wrote on his blog that he was exhausted from the intense headwinds pedaling from Wilmington to Georgetown, South Carolina. In addition to those unforeseen challenges, Hooks is using meal replacements for the first half of his trip. He's also stopping every 10 miles to do 50 push-ups, 50 sit-ups, and 50 four-count flutter kicks.
People think that's kind of weird when they see me on the side of the road, but I'm feeling really good.
Hooks faces many different challenges on the journey, but when he remembers the purpose of the ride, it encourages him to keep going.
One of the most interesting stories of how many people are touched by addiction and issues with that and substance abuse. One person would hear me talking to another, and another person would come up, and I have people now calling me. They want to join in on the ride, telling me they lost their loved one to substance abuse.
We caught up with Hooks via cell phone on Tuesday while he was taking a day away from the War Horse in Charleston, South Carolina.
Because it's going to rain, I'm using today as a maintenance day. You know, when you're on the road several days like that, things get dirty. And so I'm just, after we talk, I'm headed to the bike shop to get my bike cleaned and serviced and just tuned up, you know, I want to make sure it stays in good working order the whole way. So it's really just preventative maintenance I'm doing here.
The next day, the retired Navy SEAL and attorney went from Charleston to Beaufort. He'll pedal down Highway 17 until he reaches Savannah. Then he'll follow I-95 through Florida and then onto Highway 1, which will take him to Key West. Hooks hopes to reach the Florida border by Sunday. He'll make 11 stops before arriving in Key West. When he finally gets there, Hooks told me he's looking forward to having a hot meal and a long soak in the hot tub. If you'd like to see pictures of Hooks and his Warhorse beach cruiser, visit publicradioeast.org. There, you'll also find a link to his blog and Twitter page. The Down East Journal is made possible by our members in partnership with Tryon Powys Four Seasons Chamber Music Festival, welcoming world-renowned artist Thomas Sauer, piano, and Amit Paled, cello, as they join ECU's Ara Gregorian this Saturday, 7:30 p.m. at the History Center. Concert is in honor of Kay Williams. Tickets at ecuarts.com.
Hi, it's us, Click and Clack, the Tapper Brothers. Looking for something fast, fun, and easy?
Last time you said that, we spent the night in the poke.
No, I'm talking about the Car Talk vehicle donation program.
Oh!
Support your local station by donating your car instead of trading it in. For more information, call 866-789-TMCP.
TMCP?
Yeah, take my car, please!
That's 866-789-8627.
You're listening to the Down East Journal on Public Radio East.
This is Ann Edwards, Horticulture Extension Agent, with this week's entry in the Garden Journal. I have news about my backyard chicken flock, and I just have to share. You probably don't remember, but one of my first radio shows this year, I talked about goals I had with regard to my garden and yard. And one of them was to decide what to do about the fact that my small chicken flock, only 4 hens, was aging, and I was getting fewer and fewer eggs. And I knew that I had to do something, maybe something difficult. Well, a few months ago, my red hen, Hilda, died very quickly and without suffering, so I was happy for that. And it left me with even fewer hens laying even fewer eggs. And when they started molting this fall and no eggs were laid, I knew that I had to really think about this topic. But it still looked like the year was going to end without my taking any action. And then I was offered 2 beautiful new hens. These hens are absolutely lovely. One of them is an Easter egger, and she's gray and white and looks almost blue. The other is a mixed breed that is black feathered with gold tips and speckles and coloration. She's just gorgeous. I couldn't pass up these hens, but I also knew that my coop couldn't handle any more. And if you recall, in addition to the 3 older hens, I had been given some babies not too long ago, 2 beautiful young pullets that were getting mature but not yet laying. So my coop was already pretty full, and I didn't want to overwhelm the coop because that's when you start getting feather picking and disease problems and all sorts of social problems. So what to do? I asked around and was lucky enough to find one wonderful gentleman who has a small farm who was willing to take my 3 older hens. 2 of them are still laying pretty well, 3 to 4 eggs a week. And one of them, although she's not laying, had gotten big and fat. And I'm not sure, but maybe she'll make chicken and dumplings for him, even though I couldn't turn her into that. So now in the coop, we have the 2 new hens and the 2 young pullets that had not yet started laying. But what's really exciting is the day after I got the new hens, each of them laid one beautiful egg. The Easter egger laid a pale blue egg that was just gorgeous. All her eggs will be that color. And the crossbreed black and gold hen laid a gorgeous shiny tan egg. And that was wonderful. But the next day, there were even more eggs. Yep, the two pullets, as soon as they had young hens that were laying daily mixed with them, started laying. So I now am getting eggs from four new hens. Two of them are less than a year old, and two of them are just a year old. So I'm not going to have to deal with that issue of what to do with the aging hens for four or five more years. Thank heavens, because I wasn't doing a very good job dealing with it this time. Maybe by next time, I will have figured something out. If you don't yet have any backyard hens and have a little space, I highly recommend it. The eggs are wonderful, and they're great entertainment to watch. So think about whether someone on your list needs some backyard hens for Christmas. And I'll talk to you in next week's entry in the Garden Journal.
This is the Downeast Journal. Christmas performances are now underway in force throughout eastern North Carolina. Among them are a series of Celtic Christmas shows featuring one of the state's links to the Celtic music world, Swansboro native and ECU grad Jennifer Lico. George Olson spoke with her about her most recent Celtic CD and has this, which originally aired in April 2008.
In trying to assess Jennifer Lico's place in the Celtic music world, I posed the following question to her. I was thinking of the following. Are you a Celtic artist for those who know they like Celtic music but don't know why?
Oh, I like that. I like that.
Which, in its own way, might explain the approach she took to her third Celtic music release, A Thousand Curses Upon Love.
I wanted this album to be a collection of songs that weren't specifically all from Celtic nations, but that were influenced by Celtic tradition. And in that same respect, I didn't want them to be traditionally recorded with, you know, the same way everybody records traditional music. I really wanted that element of, let's make this song my own. I don't want to sound like a robot. I think it was Martin Hayes that said, there are as many ways to play Irish music as there are people playing Irish music. And I think that's so true.
The title track of the disc, sung in Gaelic, not the English translation that graces the cover, might be the prime example of Martin Hayes' comment, a traditional song, a non-traditional approach.
A thousand curses upon love, which has led me astray, cleaved my heart from my breast, caused my hair to fall away.
That I wanted a really strong definition of beat. In that sense, the strong definition of the beat, because it's traditional for a walking song, to have that constant beat there, because they would be walking the cloth, and that's a beating action into the table, and that's how they kept the walking going, was by singing the song and keeping this steady beat. So I wanted that to be dominant for the traditional reason, but I wanted to break all the other rules of traditional music.
The recording studio offers a unique opportunity for a musician whose live performances typically involve just voice and guitar. For one, the opportunity to bring in other performers to flesh out what on stage may be bare bones arrangements. And while on stage, she always accompanies herself. In studio, she gets to accompany herself vocally, time and time again.
On one of the songs, I think there's something like 24 tracks of just background vocals. And when you put them all together and put them way down in the mix, you can't tell that that there's 24 tracks. The nice thing about it is that I blend with myself easily. And I know the way my voice moves, and so I can move again the same way. And it's fun. I love singing harmony, and I never get the chance to sing harmony because I'm a solo artist. And so I'm always singing the melody line, and it gets frustrating every now and then. So it was really fun to record the harmony parts.
For all the talk of fun in the studio and producing a CD influenced by Celtic traditional, but not Celtic traditional, there is at least one obvious point on A Thousand Curses Upon Love, where Jennifer tries to add to the tradition in a tune co-written by herself and the CD's producer Bob Noble. Living in Ireland for a period earlier this decade, she was hanging out after a performance when stories were told about how women's Christmas should be a month-long celebration rather than a single day, which brought the obvious question from the lone American in the group, what is women's Christmas?
And they told me that it happened on the day of Epiphany, January 6th, and that on that day, the women get to sit around and drink and eat and tell stories and sing songs with other women while the men did all the cooking and cleaning and all the chores for the day. And it was the women's time to relax and enjoy because they had done all the work leading up to Christmas. And I kind of thought it was a neat idea, and then that was it.
A Thousand Curses Upon Love also contains a track whose subject matter seems to work its way into all Celtic disc, how a man's love for the sea tears him away from loved ones left behind. That exact situation is perhaps not endured too often in modern times, but in performing the song, Jennifer found her own corollary in her own personal life with her recent engagement.
I'm with somebody who takes their job as seriously as I do and has the passion for it that I have for my job. And sometimes there's that jealousy that he loves his work more than me. And I can connect to that song. And if I can connect to that song, being with a man who works for John Deere has nothing to do with the Celtic seas or the rough winds or anything, then I think a lot of people can relate to just that little bit of jealousy of, would he prefer to be working at the computer on his job than quality time with me? I just think it's such a basic human feeling. And it obviously happens all over the world.
She scorns the landlocked ladies as they wait upon their man, and they scan the red horizon till the fleet is seen again.
Jennifer moved to Brazil to be with her fiancé. She's a musician, and she told him that means she can work anywhere. So now she seeks the Celtic music scene in South America. It's small, but it's there. She found a few Celtic music festivals, some Scottish Highland games, even performed at a Robbie Burns dinner. But being in a rich musical environment like Brazil offers a unique opportunity, and while she doubts she'll soon be incorporating the traditions of Brazil into her music, it seems inevitable that something South American might somehow creep in.
It's not my main purpose while I'm there to really do a lot of performing, although it's hard not to perform. It's kind of, when it's all you've done your entire life, it's hard not to perform, and you just kind of desire those performance opportunities. So I am performing. However, I'm spending most of my time taking Portuguese classes and doing as much as I can to learn more about Brazilian music, because when else am I going to have this opportunity to do that other than when I'm living in Brazil?
It's the moon going home. It's the moon going home. It's the moon going home.
Jennifer Lico's latest CD is titled A Thousand Curses Upon Love. A couple updates since this first aired in the spring of 2008. Jennifer is no longer in Brazil, having relocated back to the mainland U.S., Minneapolis, Minnesota to be precise. But she is returning home to celebrate the holidays with a series of Celtic Christmas concerts. Appearances include Sunday, December 2nd, 2 p.m. at the Swansboro Town Hall, December 4th and 6th at Coleman Performance Hall in New Bern, and December 8th at the Carteret County Public Library in Beaufort. I'm George Olson.
Her hand on in her hand, and her long soul.
Thanks for listening to the show this week. If you have questions, comments, or ideas for features that you'd like to hear on the Down East Journal, you can submit them at the NewsHound link at our website, publicradioeast.org.